I was in one of those countries I went to, and I got a text message from one of our digital guys saying, hey, you know, hate to bother you, but can you please vote on the quarter century team? And I was pissed off. I was like, excuse me. I voted immediately. I was the first person to vote.
They lost your ballot?
Well, I kept mine anonymous because I was going to reveal it on the air if we ever wanted to break it down.
That's and why so they didn't get you.
But they know me.
So you voted twice then?
No, I only voted once.
All right, got it.
When I responded to them by saying, I already voted. I probably was the first person to vote. This is right up my alley. So I want to make that clear. We unveiled the football side of things. And look, some of the decisions were tough. Some of them were easy. Tiki Barber and Curtis Martin being the two running backs was the easiest thing possible. So congratulations,
thank you,
Tiki. Do you have a speech that you want to make?
I just would like to say I appreciate all of you WFNers, internal and external. I, however, did not vote for myself.
What?
I did not vote for
Who'd you vote for? Jacobs?
Brandon Jacobs.
Yeah. That's very humble of you.
Thank you.
But you shouldn't have done that.
He scored more touchdowns than I did.
Oh, come on, because he stole them from you. But you and Curtis, I thought, was very, very easy. The wide receivers, like, I think it's just a testament that we haven't had a lot of great New York wide receivers over the years.
You've had some seasons. You just haven't had a consistent enough wide receiver production.
Well, okay, so this is where I'm going to start an argument with you, and I guess we'll find out if Sean listens while he's on vacation. Beckham, Toomer, and Cruz, and Burris. All right, so you got four giant wide receivers. I know Plex played for the Jets, but give me a break.
Right.
I thought Jericho Cotchery was as solid as they come. He was as dependable as they come. But I guess because he doesn't have a championship or he doesn't have the flashiest moments, he wasn't really respected. But you just said consistency.
I could agree with your argument. The reason I won't argue with you is because you're right. But the challenge is the Giants just – Odell didn't win a championship, but he's probably the most iconic wide receiver in this area over the last 20 years or so. Just because of him and his antics and his – whatever that was. That was the ESPN game or Monday night game, whatever that was, that one-handed grab. Sunday night game. He just became this iconic player, and then he was breaking all kinds of records. The only issue I have with this wide receiver group –
yeah.
Is that Victor Cruz was number one. So Victor Cruz was number one. Amani was number two.
It was ranked? I didn't know it was ranked.
Yeah. Odell Beckham was number three, and Plaxico Burress was number four. All Giants, all good. Great to my former teammates. But Amani Toomer is the all-time leading receiver.
He should be number one.
100% in New York Giants history. Yeah. He has played 14 years, has two Super Bowl championships, and nobody talks about him.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the hell? And so it made me say to Tommy right before the show started, is Amani Toomer the most under-respected? Because I won't say disrespected because he's not disrespected. We respect him but when we talk about him, but he's under-respected player in New York sports history.
Oh, no, he's not. I'll give you someone who's more disrespected than him.
Under-respected. Not
under-respected. Yeah, I'll give you a guy right off the top.
Who?
And I'm glad he made this list. Mo Lewis. Mo Lewis spent 13 years with the Jets, made the Pro Bowl a bunch of times,
but he's only remembered. Okay, but here's where you're wrong.
Go.
Amani Toomer, truly one of, if not the greatest wide receiver in New York Giant history, never made a Pro Bowl.
Oh, so from that standpoint.
Yes, that's a good point. I'm not just talking about like locally. I'm talking about like the sport you played, people just don't respect you.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
It's got to be too. But you're right about Mo Lewis. People forget. They think he only played here for like...
Dude, he was here for 13 years.
They think he played for like 5 years here.
Yeah.
He was here for most of his career.
And, you know, we just celebrated David Wright. He's a forever Met. Mo Lewis was a forever Jet.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets kind of picked on as, oh, yeah, well, he brought the Tom Brady era here. I mean, come on. He hit a quarterback. The quarterback got hurt.
Right.
And then subsequently, yes, the backup became the greatest of all time. What are we talking about? The other one I had an issue with was, all right, so the tight ends were Jeremy Shockey and Kevin Boss. I don't know. I think Dustin Keller was better than Kevin Boss.
Mm.
I mean, what do I tell you? I think he was.
I had this debate with myself when I was voting. Shockey was easy.
Of course.
Easy tight end number one. Keller, it was Keller and Boss. And I was like, yeah, I'll do Keller. But then I couldn't justify it.
What do you mean you couldn't justify it? Because he's a Jet?
Yeah, no, just because... I couldn't think of moments that stood out.
That's the problem.
Kevin Boss at least won a championship.
That's ultimately what got Kevin Boss the victory. Yes. He was on a team that won a championship.
Yes.
But, I mean, the guy was here for 3.5 years and
then disappeared. And then left and did nothing.
Yeah. So the offensive line was great. Deal, Snee, Mangold, O'Hara, Ferguson. On defense, I got a big issue.
All right, let's hear it.
And I think Tiki's going to be offended.
Go ahead.
So Dexter Lawrence, Quinnen Williams, Justin Tuck, Michael Strahan, fine.
Mm-hmm.
Mo Lewis, Antonio Pierce, Jonathan Vilmet, linebacker, fine.
All good.
Okay. Landon Collins, Antrell Roller, the two safeties, fine. Darrell Revis, unanimous, fine. Jason Seahorn. And I'll give you a guy. If you're like, oh, well, who? Antonio Cromartie made the Pro Bowl like three times as a Jet quarterback.
I know, but here's the thing. Jason Seahorn is legend. It's not, and it's not because he was a great superstar player. I mean, he was Pro Bowler, all those other things. One of the best cornerbacks in the league. Spectacular, memorable interceptions. He's just legend. You know what I mean? He's just.
But a lot of his legend was prior to the turn of the century.
I agree. But he's still just legend. I mean, think about it. Riley Moss, who's the starting cornerback for the Denver Broncos. Is the first, last year, the first white starting cornerback since Jason Seahorn.
That's why we're putting him on the list, because he's a white guy?
No, I'm just telling you, he's legend. It's not necessarily he's the best. It's just, there's a legend about him. Even if it's false, like, whatever, yeah. Propping him up.
He's propped up because he was beloved by Giant fans. Yes. That's totally fine. But if I'm being honest, on a quarter century team and I'm putting a second cornerback next to the great Darrell Revis, the answer is Antonio Cromartie. And if anybody wants to pick up kick returns, he had one of the most important kick returns in the history of the Jets. Playoff game against the Indianapolis Colts, the year where they got to the AFC Championship game and lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers. His return got to, I think, the 40-45, which set up a game-winning field goal by Nick Folk, and they won the game at the Horn. And that was set up by a kick return by Antonio Cromartie.
Right. I mean, Jason didn't return kicks. He tried and tore his ACL.
That's right. We remember the negative of him doing that.
Right.
In that Jet Giant game.
But it's also part of his legend.
Yeah. So those are my issues. Tommy, you got any issues? Or are you good with this whole thing?
No, I have some big issues here at Tiki.
Big issues?
Tiki's 100% right. Amani Toomer, all-time Giants leading receiver in receptions, touchdowns, yards. He's in the Ring of Honor. He should be the number one receiver on this list. I know he doesn't have the charisma of Victor Cruz, and I love Victor Cruz. I don't want to tear him down, but in many ways, he just kind of came. He was like a phoenix, and then he was gone. And I think that because of the salsa and the personality, Teak, Amani doesn't have that kind of personality. He's a lunch pail guy. He's what you think of when you think of those giant teams back then, and he just gets overlooked because of that.
He's a Michigan man. It's exactly what you think about with a blue-collar Michigan man.
Now, I voted for Beckham. But I think there is a case to be made for Hakeem Nicks because he was so great in that Super Bowl run. And Beckham doesn't have a ring, but it's hard to ignore what Odell was as a superstar and how he was when he first bursted onto the scene. That's number one. Number two, Evan is 100% right. Jason Seahorn, his best years with the Giants were before 2000. I voted for Sauce. To me, already Sauce.
Yeah, I can't do that yet.
But Evan, even in
he's not better than Cromartie yet.
In his first couple of years, you don't think Sauce Gardner was better than anything Antonio Cromartie did here?
He's got two All Pros, two Pro Bowls, two All Pros.
Yeah, I
in
think
three
the,
years.
I think my issue is I don't love handing that out that quickly. Mm. Like I think eventually, yes, you're looking at Darrell Revis and Sauce Gardner. Maybe someday Sauce passes Darrell, though. That's asking too much. I just think based on a career that's over and fully accomplished. Cromartie did a lot for a team that got to the AFC Championship game, like I mentioned, and made the Pro Bowl multiple times. So if your argument to me is, hey, pound for pound, who's better? I think you're right. I think it's a great point. But I guess to me, I like the clarity of what that guy was and what that guy contributed, especially to winning, which Cromartie was able to do. So for now, we do this vote in five more years, a little different. But for now, yeah, I would give the edge to Crow.
And there's two other guys, by the way, Dexter Lawrence, who you mentioned, and Quinnen Williams, who are still active.
They've done enough, though.
Exactly.
I think they've been around enough, yes.
Now, I have some inside information here about some of the votes. Now, we have the results, but I have some inside information I think is pretty spicy about the votes.
Interesting.
I have already launched an internal investigation about this. I was made aware, now Tiki said he didn't vote for himself, There are four people that work here that did not vote for Tiki Barber. I want them outed.
Really?
I want them to be publicly shamed.
Well,
and
I'm one, so I'm one of them.
So that's five. There's five total, but obviously we know Teek's one. Four of you out there. Now, we could speculate. I'll throw a name out there. BT. I'm sure he'd invite, you know, big Jet guy.
Oh, come on.
He could publicly say Tiki's my guy. He's a huge Jet fan. He probably voted for a Bilal Powell or Sean Green or somebody like that. LT, the other
Thomas,
LT, LaDainian Tomlinson.
Yeah, exactly. He got his Virginia guys messed up.
Right, TJ there. So I'm going to say him. I don't know. Whose side is Evan on here? Big Jet fan, you know what I mean? I think we got to out all the Jet fans here. Publicly shame him.
I can tell you I voted for Tiki Barber. Tiki and Curtis. I can confirm that.
Thank you. Thank you, Evan. I appreciate it.
But I got an idea on who voted against him. I mean, technically, the guy works here, and God knows he wants to work here again. I bet you Craig Carton voted against him. He was the one who said, get rid of him.
Hold on. So if five voted against me, that means that more had to have voted against Curtis.
Correct. Right, exactly, because Tiki's running back one, so Tiki had more votes than Curtis Martin.
Voted against Curtis? That dude's a Hall of Famer. He rushed for 1,000 yards every freaking year of his career.
The Tiki and Curtis, like, there's a few of these that should have been unanimous, and if it wasn't unanimous, you were being a jerk. And I think according to our records here at the WFAN Quarter Century team, Darrell Revis and Jeremy Shockey were unanimous?
That's
were they
correct.
The only two guys that were unanimous?
Eli, according to the post I saw on social media from WFAN,
was not.
Was one vote short of
Well, let's out that person. I know who it was.
Who?
Tiki Barber.
It was not me.
You're Kerry Collins. You're loyal to us.
I'm loyal to Elisha.
Even more so than Kerry Collins?
Yes.
Okay.
Wait, did I vote for Kerry Collins?
Yeah. I told you. You did.
Now I don't remember.
Your secret is safer with us, Tiki. We won't tell anybody. Just say it on the air. We won't pass it along.
This is Tiki Barber. I might have voted for Kerry Collins.
Of course you did. And by the way, this should not even be a controversy, though some people will make it one. The guy was the quarterback of a team that you played on that got to a Super Bowl.
For some reason, I thought I voted for Eli. Though.
You didn't vote for Eli. You voted for Kerry Collins, and that's okay.
Oh,
I'm right, aren't I?
You probably are. Now I got to go back and check.
Because when I saw that he was one vote short, I was like, who didn't vote for Eli? Like, you think me and BT voted for Mark Sanchez? Like, what do you really think happened?
Right.
And I said, if there's anybody who works here who's got valid reason to vote, not against Eli, but to vote for somebody else, it would be you voting for Kerry, considering you swear by him as a teammate.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He quarterbacked a team that you were on that went to the Super Bowl. I mean, of course.
I think you're right. I don't remember now, but I think you're right.
Yeah, right. I'm right. I know I'm right.
Right.
The rest of it, though, I thought they did a pretty good job. I guess we'll reveal the hockey, the basketball, and the baseball as the days go on. So just make sure you're checking out the WFAN social media feed at WFAN660. Is that our social media handle? At WFAN660?
That is correct.
Yeah, it sounds about right. And yes, we may discuss it
Even
on the
if
air.
If it's not right, you'll get it. It'll get close enough. You'll find it.
Yeah, you'll find it. I'm very interested in some of the other stuff. Like, the basketball stuff is fascinating, the baseball stuff, building a rotation. So all those results later this week. One other thing before we get back to your phone calls, 888-808-1019. During our last break, I had a private conversation with my oldest son because I am doing the show from home today. I have some medical things I have to take care of. Don't worry, as of now, I'm
Did
not
you
dying.
Tell him my concern about young Jet?
I did. I said, Jet, Tiki's talking about you on the radio. I just want to get your answer on something.
I'm concerned.
That's fine.
I'm not threatening. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just a little bit concerned that Jet might have some turncoat in him.
I framed it very down the middle. I said, Tiki thinks you may turn on some of the teams we root for, so let me ask you. He's like, yeah, sure, what? I said, can you see yourself turning on the Mets? And his answer was yes.
Ah, see, I told you.
Hold on. There's a complete answer. Okay. And I said, really? What would make you turn on the Mets? Great follow-up. And he said, well, if they move to a different city.
That's solid. I mean, that happened.
Two
generations ago or three generations ago. That happened.
Because I said to him, okay, who would you root for? And his answer was, whoever replaces the Mets in New York. And I said, all right, so far we're good,
right?
Because I think a lot of people would do that.
Of course.
I said, is there anything else that would cause you to turn? And he said, absolutely not. So he is safe. I said, what about the other teams? And I was very pleasantly surprised to hear he is 100% committed to the New York Jets and the Brooklyn Nets. Again, same rules. Mm. If they move away, he's open to changing, but he's locked in on the Jets and Nets. But he did admit he can be bought when it comes to hockey.
And that's what you speculated on.
It's my fault because I haven't taken him enough.
Yeah, right.
Like, kids are impressionable when you take them to the building, which is why, like, this is year two of me being a Jets season ticket holder. And
now you got to really start going.
I'm going to go to a lot of the 1 o'clock games with him.
Right.
Like, initially.
You have to now.
I have to. Because A, it gives him a chance to learn the game. Football's the most complicated game by far compared to the other. The atmosphere is awesome. And then I can secure his Jet fandom, even if they suck.
Well, I mean, this is actually the year to start bringing them.
Yeah.
Because they could be good.
They could be
good. Not like great, but they're going to be interesting.
That's right. And I'm setting the expectations very low, much like I did with the Nets this past year. Like, we're just going for fun.
The Nets are still in the league.
We'll have some hot dogs, you know, we'll barbecue a little bit, and hopefully that works. So your opinion on my son turncoating was a little bit wrong. Mm.
Well, but I appreciate it. I was just speculating. I said I wasn't worried about it.
Nets suck.
Well, he was there on Saturday. Guess what? They sucked. Let's go to Frank, who's calling from Roseland, New Jersey. How are you today, Frank?
What's up, Frank?
Well, welcome back to the U.S., Evan. I have to say, Italy is elite to the U.S. It's the best.
It's a wonderful country. I had some very positive opinions on Italy. I'll get to that a little bit later on.
All right, so give me like 30 seconds. I just want to ramble through a few things, then I'd like your response on them. I'm a Yankee fan, so number one, I would love the Suarez deal because of the obvious. But am I crazy to think I'd rather a third baseman who can play elite defense and put more bat on ball because of the power we have already? Number two, as a Mets fan, who's your, like, premier? I guess I was going to say center fielder, but you said earlier, like, your premier bat or just, like, the bat you'd want to get the most that's realistic at the deadline for the Mets. And the third thing is for Tommy, Mr. Positivity. How do you defend... He's a great player, but right now, how do you defend what Lindor is doing?
Mm. Yeah. Try to defend that, Tommy. You go first.
How do I defend what he's doing? Are you referring to the fact that
his lack of hitting, lack of production, lack of being clutch?
I think he's hurt. I think he's hurt. Now, we know he had the toe injury, and I think numbers...
he is hurt. If you count the toe, he is hurt.
Right, so I think he's playing through. We know Lindor will play every single game. The only reason he missed games last year because he was literally forced out with the back injury. I think he's going through it. I think it's probably worse than they're leading on, and I think he's playing hurt. And I think that has led to his lack of hitting over the last, I don't know, month or so. That's what I would attest to what's going on with him.
You may be right. Right? Because who knows? Like, how do we know how he actually feels? And he's a tough guy.
And he's not going to tell us.
No. He's going to want to play through.
Exactly. He's not going to make the excuse. And to your point, Evan, he doesn't want to sit down. He's always wants to play.
But here's the kind of the pivot back I ask Tommy, because Tommy has said something about Lindor, which is so accurate, so true. And it's become so obvious. He's the engine. Like, when he doesn't perform, the Mets don't win. When he does perform, they do win. They had a stat on SNY the other day that showed his numbers in wins versus his numbers in losses, which, by the way, that's common to have splits that are very unique when you're winning versus when you're losing. But with Lindor, it was over the top. And so that's obvious, and you've said that for a while. You're 100% right. But if you believe he's hurt and you believe that's the cause of his struggles, what would actually give you confidence that he's going to magically get healthy and start hitting again?
I just think you heal over the course of time. I think that you get through the pain or you learn how to deal with the pain and then you just get through it. And if it's not the injury, which I think it is, I think he's hurt. I ultimately feel like he's going to start hitting because you know why? He just switched April with June and July this year, right? He always gets off to the slow starts. He got off to the hot start, got named an all-star. So maybe he put, you know, it's like changing your vacations around. He moved from April to June and July and he'll just get rolling here in the second half. Just missed one on Friday.
When was the toe injury?
Do we know? Was it in Colorado, Evan? I want to say it was right around that time.
Yeah, it was a month ago.
So was it Colorado the end of March?
Not March. June?
I mean, March, April. End of May. Was it Colorado end of May? Or was it in Colorado?
Let me pull up I think it was in Colorado. I got to look at my...
Because he pinch hit in Colorado coming back from the toe injury, missed maybe a game or so, and then he had a big double or something like that.
Right, so that Colorado, that was...
That was early June. That was June 6th, 7th, and 8th. So you're looking at a month and a half.
Right. And if you look at that month and a half, I mean, he's hitting .206 or whatever it is. His OPS is 630, 640, something. He's been bad ever since that early
put in
part of June.
Lindor's stats since June 6th. So since that moment, I should actually make it June 8th because that's when his slump really began. His numbers since June 8th right now are 183 batting average, 5 home runs, 16 RBIs. Wow. It's bad, and that's over a month. So they need him to turn it around, though, because he is so important to the engine of this offense. I don't have a dream bat. Like, he asked the question, all right, who's the bat that, boy, you acquire, that's going to pump you up? Right. I don't think the dream bat exists. Like, I don't think Jarren Duran would be a great addition. I don't think he's available. I mean, the Red Sox are in a playoff spot right now. Are they really trading him away? Unless it's major league talent for major league talent kind of trade. And I don't think the Mets are equipped to, like, give the Red Sox pitching since the Mets need pitching.
Well, with Duran, wasn't it just because they're trying to bring up the young kids? And
yes,
he's going to be the odd man out, so you might as well get something for him?
It's a surplus of outfielders to maybe add pitching. Are the Mets really in position to take young pitching or controllable pitching and trade it for a controllable center fielder?
Right.
Not really.
No.
So I don't think Duran is realistic. Cedric Mullins, guys like that, I mean, sure, there's slight upgrades over what they have, but I don't think, to your point, there's anybody out there that would just excite me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that guy exists right now.
No. At least it's not a huge trade like Eugenio Suarez. But his other question was about, if you're the Yankees, do you eschew going after Suarez and go get a more contact-focused bat?
So the follow-up...
It's a really good third baseman.
Okay.
So
who? I hate to sound like an owl, but who? Like, now we're in the name season. Instead of just saying, you need this kind of player or that kind of player, who are the names?
Well,
like, who's the third baseman that fits that?
Arenado is one. Get your brain
amazing told. We think of him that way, but you're right. Defensively, he's utterly brilliant.
Right, but that's what you were talking about now. And,
yeah.
And the one I mentioned earlier, who Sean has been obsessed with for 2 years, Ryan McMahon, but he's having a bad season with his stick. So you got to just believe that the change of scenery would help him, Ryan McMahon, that is, with the Yankees. Arenado, it's different because the Cardinals are in a weird kind of spot right now.
He's also just not the player he used to be.
Right.
There's a lot of money involved in terms of how much they're going to pick up. It's like, if you have a strength, and the Yankees, to me, clearly have a strength. We talked about this about an hour ago. You could rewind on the Odyssey app. The Yankees' strength is that they score more runs than anybody else.
Right,
so they've done it by a lot.
Right. Do you double down on that?
Yes.
Or do you go get more balance around it? You know what I mean?
I think that it depends on who the player is, right? Depends on who's available. If you can get a really good bullpen arm because they could use bullpen help, who would be against that? If you could add a starting pitcher that can help this rotation, especially with some of the injuries they're having, who would be against it? But if you can take what is already your strength, hitting more home runs than anybody else, by a lot, by the way. They've hit 156 home runs. Who's number two in the American League?
Right.
It's not even close. They've scored 5.25 runs in the game. Who's second in the American League? It's not even that close. If you have a chance to take that and basically put it on steroids, that's not a bad thing.
No.
Like, there's no such thing as having too much offense.
But that's not Arenado.
No, that's Suarez. That's why Suarez right. would excite me if I'm a Yankee fan.
Oh, of course it would, because it feels like... I mean, I talked about 2 through 5. It's really 2 through 6 because you put in Goldschmidt, who's sitting in the 6 hole there. Now you throw in another bat. And you 3/4 of the lineup you're scared the hell out of.
Yes.
Right, but isn't Suarez very similar to the players they already have? He hits a lot of home runs. He strikes out a lot. He's bad defensively.
Yes.
He's a bad base runner.
Right.
Yes.
So
which is why the caller said, give me a good third baseman who's just more of a on-base guy or contact.
Or great defensively like McMahon and Arenado, and perhaps maybe one of them will, you know, kind of go back in time a little bit and reclaim what they used to be, especially a guy like Arenado. Suarez is the sexy play, but he has so many deficiencies that the Yankees already have a million of those guys like that.
You're right about the deficiencies, but let's not just eliminate what he brings, which is even more power.
But they already have enough, don't they?
Well, you never have enough.
Yes, you do. They could go toe-to-toe with the Dodgers with power. They can as far as the depth of their lineup. Up and guys like Edmund and Will Smith,
but Tommy,
and Hernandez,
Tommy,
Kike. I mean, come on.
Why go toe-to-toe when you can look down on everybody else? You know what I mean? Like, Why?
Just out homer everybody. Is that going to work in October? I don't
Why
know.
Why not?
Because I just if don't you think
have
it will.
More, if you have more guys that are capable of it, that means there's more of a possibility that you're going to do it. Like, you're not wrong with your critique of him. I'm not saying you're wrong, and I'm certainly not even saying you're wrong that adding a guy like McMahon or Arenado brings some kind of differences that improve your teams in other ways. Like, you're not wrong. But what about getting even better at something you're already good at? There's nothing wrong with that either. This adage of it's too much, why would it be too much? Score even more runs.
And I promise you this is not coming from just because I'm a Met fan. I think Suarez makes more sense for the Mets than he does for the Yankees. I just
think. I think they make most sense. He makes sense for both teams. I don't think it has to be an either or. I think both teams could use him for different reasons. In the Yankees' case, it's not the need more than it is just getting even better at something you're already good at. You know what I mean by that?
Right.
No. Why is that a negative?
No, because wouldn't you want to help your, like, what is Suarez going to do to the Yankees? He's going to hit two home runs in a game that they're already up 10 runs and they're
bludgeoning. Why would you assume that?
Because the only thing he brings to the table, and you say, well, why do you want him on the Mets? Because the Mets are lacking in run production. They need a
Forget
guy.
Forget the Mets. I agree that they could use him. Okay. But wait, hold on. I want to counter this. Why do you assume the two home runs he's adding are happening in 10-2 games? Why can't they happen in a game in which they're losing 7-6? That doesn't make any sense.
Because I think that you already have guys in that lineup that could hit home runs. So another guy to hit more home runs, isn't it just like piling on? Meaning
yes.
He's just going to score 20 runs instead of 10 runs.
No.
Is he going to do the little things that the Yankees desperately need? They need guys that do the little things. They're
hit
starving for
doubles.
That.
Hit singles and doubles.
Bad base running.
Right.
We saw it again on Friday. And I think Suarez.
Vivek.
Yeah, Vivas. I mean, the Suarez stuff just adds to, I understand strengthening a strength, but the Yankees for years have been bad base runners, bad defense. These are all the things, strike
you're
out
not,
a lot. It's all that Suarez
you're
does
not,
wrong.
You're not wrong with any of that, but I don't think the other players that we're talking about, while they are better defensively, I will give you that, while they are better base runners, I don't think overall they make you that as good as Suarez, because he's so much better offensively.
Don't you?
Which makes your lineup even better.
I know, but and you said it earlier in the year. That's why I'm surprised you're pivoting off it. And St. Louis, they just got swept over the weekend. Nolan Arenado, if he can go back just a little bit in time offensively, he is elite defensively.
Yeah, he's 34. You don't see it happening now. It just feels whatever in St. Louis because they're over 500. They're three games over 500. So they're not out of it, so to speak. But it's a weird spot.
Right, change
you know
of scenery,
they're not making any hay this year, St. Louis. You don't think so? So
keep this in mind. Like, you're right about the Cardinals and if they would pivot and how they would pivot in terms of money and how much they would hold up. Nolan Arenado is a brilliant defensive third baseman. He still is. Would he make the New York Yankees better just strictly by his defense? Absolutely. Will he give you more offense than what Peraza and Vivas have? How can he not? I mean, Oswald Peraza's hit 150. Obviously, he would be an upgrade offensively. The problem is you're factoring in a lot of money, and that player isn't going to be worth that kind of money. So that's the kind of caveat with Nolan Arenado. If I can get him and not have to spend that much money and not have to give up prospects or big prospects, sure he makes them better.
Arenado feels good in the short term because it feels like, oh, we've created a chance for us to win a World Series. But then if you don't and you're stuck with him, then you're really going to hate yourself.
Right, and Suarez is a rental. Like, you bring him in, and it's, hey, let's add more bats, let's try to out-slug teams, and then at the end of the season, we probably pivot, and we probably let him go. It's funny, Teak, and Tommy in this case, if Peraza was hitting 215,
mm-hmm.
I would probably come on the radio and say, dude, they're fine.
Right.
He plays fine.
Right.
But the problem is, and the Mets are running into this too, with Tyrone Taylor in center and even at times Torrens, who had a very good weekend. It's fine to have a glove first player. You got to hit a little bit. Like, you can't hit 145 and be out there every single day.
Which he is, by the way. The Dodgers are the second team, Evan, in home runs. 150 to the Yankees. 156. And
I'm
the Dodgers.
Dodgers
lead.
First.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not including them because they're the National League. It's irrelevant. Like, to me, my focus when I'm talking about a pennant race or getting through a postseason, it is about the league because the Dodgers are irrelevant until late October if those two teams face each other.
Right. So nobody's even close. The next next closest team is the Red Sox.
Right.
And
they
have 50 or 27 or 28 less home runs.
Yes, there's a huge difference, and that's what matters.
Right.
And so you're right, it's the rich being richer if they add Suarez in terms of power, but what's wrong with being even more rich? I think Tommy, of all people, would understand that. Mm-hmm. Like, you've got $10 million, but you wouldn't want $5 million more? I already got enough money. I don't need more money.
Right,
Tommy,
but if you told me, no, but you're saying like, all right, Lou, you got like $10 million in cash under the bed. I could give you $15 million more in cash, or I could take that $15 million and put it in like a fund that I could have like 10 years down the line. Does that make sense? Like,
no.
I feel. What do you mean? I already have an embellishment, or I already have all these great riches, but I could put the money somewhere else. I think that's smarter than just adding to the cash I already have underneath my bed. I don't need any more of the cash.
This will be the tiebreaker in this Yankee debate that you and I are having. Who would Sean Morash be on the side of?
Mine.
Me or Tommy?
Mine, 100%.
Really?
Yes, 100%.
I win. Okay, good. That's a victory for me. Thank you very much.
Wait, why would you win that? He'd be on my side.
Because he would be wrong.
Okay.
He would be wrong.
You want me to start? Right. I could text the law firm, and I could give them both names, or I could text McPherson, McMonagle, and Morash.
He's on a Long Island beach right now.
I'll text McMonagle.
Mm. Yeah, yes. Text the law firm and find out preference between Nolan Arenado and Eugenio Suarez. The David Wright ceremony on Saturday was awesome, and I was almost going to cry. I came very, very close to tearing up. Did you tear up at all, Tommy, or you played it completely straight?
Yeah, I didn't cry at all. There's only a few things in life I've cried about. When I got the bill for my wedding, maybe a death, but I'm not going to cry over an athlete. I'm just not going to go to that.
Really?
No.
Single digits amount of crying in your life, Sergio?
No, I mean, listen, did I relive my 20s over the last couple of years as far as when I saw all the David Wright highlights? Did I get the feels? Yeah. Did I get goosebumps? Absolutely.
No, forget that. Don't give me shtick. When was the last time you cried?
When was the last time I cried?
Yeah.
At a funeral.
Okay. Well, before that.
I've only cried at funerals. And then, when I got the bill at my wedding. I cry over? Well, I've never had a child, so I wouldn't cry at a birth.
A movie?
At a movie? I've only cried during two movies. You ready?
He went home before you continued.
Well, hold on. I was younger, to be fair.
I don't cry to... Well, I cried over a couple of movies.
You're right about the movies. I have cried twice after movies.
Okay.
Name them.
My Girl.
That was a good one.
Tremendous. Yeah. And I have to admit, I got a little teary eye after The Notebook. I got to admit that. Maybe that makes me not manly, but I thought that was...
I refused to watch it.
Really?
Yes. Because I just knew.
Yeah, it's a polarizing movie, but I like it.
That's just one of those that your significant other sucks you into.
Yeah,
to try.
That's
to
why we
emotional.
All saw it. That's why I saw it years ago.
Evan,
I was dating somebody.
Evan,
right?
Who I know is more emotional, he will cry at the drop of the hat. I'm just not like that. I don't cry a lot.
I do cry a lot. Like, I remember Big Mac gave me a lot of crap because when the Mets won the division in 2015, I teared up. I got very emotional. And he's like, "Why are you crying over winning a division?" I was like, "Yeah, it doesn't happen very often. I mean, as a Met fan, I've only seen my team win two divisions in my lifetime. I'm too young for 88, 86, 73, and 69. So for me, it was 06 and 2015. So I do get very emotional during sports stuff. I came close with David, but Jet didn't want me to cry. He actually told me, like, I don't want you crying during this. And I was like, all right, I guess I'll hold it in.
Wow.
Which I probably should have ignored
Man
him.
Man of the house.
I know. I should have ignored him and said, you know what? It's good sometimes
right.
to cry.
This is my emotional moment, kid.
Yeah, but I thought the ceremony was great. It was odd how it started raining as soon as David started talking. The other thing that was crazy, I do want to say the traffic was crazy. And the Mets are selling out almost every game. Like, they're getting big crowds every single day. So the idea that this big crowd would cause the amount of immense traffic that we saw on Saturday doesn't compute, considering the next day I went, they announced a bigger crowd, and there was no traffic. So I'm confused. Maybe you guys have smarter brains than me. Why would the same amount of people cause more traffic on Saturday than on Friday or Sunday? How do you explain that?
I think maybe other things were going on, not baseball related.
So it was not a Wright-related traffic jam?
No, it was, I don't know. Is that a throughway going someplace else? Like to the beach?
It's a disaster around City Field. That's what it is. I had to get out with my friend 10 minutes away, and we walked for 10 minutes out of our lift. That's how awful the traffic was.
Wow.
So I was getting very nervous because, you know, as Tommy knows, I don't want to miss the first pitch. I was going to be apoplectic if I missed.
Apoplectic.
Apoplectic.
Thank you, Rosie.
For a second, I was like, what word is he trying to say?
Apoplectic?
Yeah. Apoplectic. Whatever it is.
Apoplectic.
Apoplectic. If I miss the David Wright ceremony, so the clock just keeps moving back. Like, at first, my ETA is 2:30, no big deal. Ceremony is supposed to start at 3:15. Then it's 2:45. Then it's 2:50. Then it's 3 o'clock. Then I make a wrong turn. I choked at a big spot. And I look at my dad, because I was going with my dad and my oldest son, and I said, let's just park on the street. It's only a one-mile walk. Now, my dad's got some heart issues.
Right.
He looks at me and says...
And it wasn't cool.
No! He looks at me and says, are you serious? I said, what's the problem? And he's like, I'm going to drop dead. I said, okay, forget it. Well, we will get to the parking lot. So I get to the parking lot right around 3 o'clock. So I'm like, all right, we're going to make it. We rush inside. We're in the seat by 3:12. Because again, they had teased, hey, be in your seat by 3:15. They didn't start the ceremony till 3:40. And maybe that was related to the traffic.
Well, you know what? You might be right. Because if there was, there was no timetable. I mean, you had to start the game at a certain time, but the ceremony could be whenever.
And they pushed the start time back. Like, the Met games didn't start till 4:30. So I'm under the belief, and no one has confirmed this with me, that the Mets saw what was going on, wanted the building to be as packed as possible, and moved back the start time by about 15, 20 minutes. Because I wasn't the only person running in there to make sure I didn't miss it. Rosie got out of his lit. Now, you made it, Rosie, in time?
Yeah, we made it. I got to the seat at 3 o'clock, so we made it in plenty of time.
Not bad. And, Loogie, you don't even take cars, right? So what were you, taking the train?
I took the train, so I was good. I got there around 3 o'clock, so I was perfect. Now, there was a Zach Bryan concert at MetLife. I think he did three shows, too. I don't know if
at
that
MetLife,
impacted.
Though?
Yeah.
It's two rivers away.
I know. I'm just trying to figure people. But it's just more. Well, it's just more cars on the road. It's a big event going on in the Tri-State area. So it might have had some kind of impact on that. By the way, Evan, and I know a lot of people that I spoke to were curious about this one. It was a choice. The 10 minutes they took to honor the opposing clubhouse manager or whatever
it was,
during the David Wright ceremony.
Whatever his name.
And then that 10 minutes and you pushed it back. It wouldn't have rained on David Wright if you just hadn't done that, if you just timed it out better. Not that it was pouring rain, but what was the idea of doing that during the David Wright ceremony? There was no other night or day they could have done that?
So when the Mets have their Hall of Fame ceremony, which they do, you know, they've had a lot of Mets Hall of Fame ceremonies, they'll always throw in somebody who we're not familiar with, but certainly deserve to be honored because of what they've done behind the scenes. And I forget the guy's name. What was his name? Tony Pollino or something like that?
Tony Carullo, I believe. Something with a C.
Okay. Tony Carullo. He deserves to be honored.
100%.
100%. So usually during a Mets Hall of Fame ceremony, in between inducting Edgardo Alfonso and Al Leiter, they'd say, hey, by the way, Tony Carullo, let's honor him, right? Mm. Because it was only David Wright, and he was going into the Mets Hall of Fame and was having his number retired, this was the only place to do it. If you do it on a Tuesday night, nobody's going
to
care.
Right, but wouldn't it make more sense to maybe do it like before? Wasn't it like in the middle of it, if my recollection?
It was. Yeah. It was. It was like...
It was weird.
I thought it was weird, but I think they kind of had to do it. If you want to honor the guy, and they should honor the guy, even if you don't care about him, Tommy.
No, I'm not suggesting
they
that.
Just honor him on a different day?
That's what I'm saying, T.
Because if they honor him on a different day, no one's paying attention.
They have to bring the pomp and circumstance again, and all the pomp and circumstance is already there.
Well, if I told you, Teak, hey, we're going to a game in August, but get there early because they're honoring Tony Carullo, who's the visiting clubhouse manager, would you get there early to honor him?
Probably not.
Okay. So there's your answer.
But can't you just do it in, I don't know, the seventh inning stretch or something?
No.
Why?
I think you guys are all wrong about this.
I'm just...
They stuck it in there to give this guy a great... Tommy, I'm going to make it personal. I'm going to figure this out.
Yeah, but you could do, yeah, I am. But you could have done it 10 minutes before a game. But okay, go ahead.
I got something for you. You ready?
Yeah.
It is 30 years from now. Okay,
30 years from now.
The Mets are honoring Jet Williams. He is going into the Mets Hall of Fame, and he's having his jersey retired.
Okay.
Big day. That's all anyone cares about. We're going to honor Jet Williams, the career Met. For those that are not aware, he's the Mets' top prospect right now. They also want to honor Positive Tommy.
Ooh.
Because for 30 years, Positive Tommy was the third or fourth wheel on a radio show.
Now you're making it personal.
Right. And he was on Twitter, and he was really positive. And while not a superstar, certainly some people that people know.
Well, how did this become a dig at me? But go ahead. Yeah.
It's not a dig at you.
Well, you're taking digs at me. You call me the fourth wheel. You say 30 years from now, nobody cared about me, or I wasn't a superstar, or this, that, and the other. I'm now the visiting clubhouse manager, basically, of WFAN, is what you're saying. It's not about this guy, Tony. He seemed like a nice fella. I'm just saying, why'd you do it at David Wright ceremony?
I'm not finished.
Okay.
You're going into the Mets Hall of Fame, and you're bitching about how I'm getting you there? I mean, come on. You're in the Mets Hall of Fame.
I would like to think after 30 years of positive service from Positive Tommy that even like a Wednesday night against the Diamondbacks, you take 10 minutes before the game and you honor me.
So they want to stick you in the middle of the Jet Williams ceremony so that 42,000 people can give Positive Tommy the nice golf clap that he deserves.
I see what you're saying. So okay, sort of the rub of David Wright's ceremony.
If you have your own day 10 minutes before first pitch, isn't that more remembered than stuck in the middle of David Wright?
No, because 10 minutes before first pitch, everybody's out there getting hot dogs and pizza. They're not paying attention. When it's David Wright's ceremony, Teak, it's the rare moment where 42,000 people all have their eyes on the Howie Rose podium in center field.
But then they all question, well, what's this guy doing?
I think
poor Tony became a villain in my section. They were booing him. They hated the guy. Seriously. Come on. The guy got a video, I think.
Do you think that would happen to Positive Tommy during Jet Williams' Hall of Fame jersey retirement ceremony?
They would know who Positive Tommy is.
And that's the difference. No one knows who Tony Carullo is.
Are we sure his name is Tony Carullo, too?
It is. I checked.
All right, there we go.
But now you do. Isn't that the beautiful part about it?
Well, we do because we've been talking about it for 5 minutes.
But exactly. And if it happened on a Tuesday night before they played the Kansas City Royals, no one would remember.
In a convoluted way, this was your way of honoring Tony Carullo, wasn't it, Evan?
That's right. Well, I didn't even bring it up. Tommy did.
Well, people brought it up to me. I found it to be peculiar, but I noticed people were like annoyed by it. Like a bunch of people came up to me after the game and were like kind of like, what was that all about? I'm like, I don't know. I'll bring it up to Evan.
They've done it before. Like, I remember when Edgardo Alfonso went in the Mets Hall of Fame, and they put, like, three guys in. In the middle of it, they honored somebody. And I don't even remember who it was. It may have been Jay Horowitz, not to knock Jay.
So you don't remember it. So it's not memorable. You remember everything. You write everything down, and you don't remember what clubhouse attendant or what, whoever assistant they honored between Fonzie's Hall of Fame thing.
I think you guys are being pigs.
I'm not being a pig.
Asking the question.
Right. I'm not saying the guy didn't deserve it. Obviously, he did. It's a great moment. It was great to see Jay Horowitz out there. I'm not suggesting they didn't deserve it. I just thought the timing and the placement of it was just interesting, and a lot of people reacted in a kind of a negative way about it.
I had no issue with it. I'm also happy that they didn't turn this into honoring Francisco Lindor. Like, if they want to name Francisco Lindor captain and there were rumors that this was going to turn into that, you do that in spring training. You make a big announcement in late February. You have a nice announcement down in Port St. Lucie, Florida. I don't believe in doing the captain announcement in the middle of a season, especially during the ceremony in which you're retiring the number of a legendary Met.
Unless he wanted to do it.
Unless who wanted to do it? David?
David Wright.
Yeah, even still, I wouldn't be in favor of it.
We had a long conversation about this on Thursday or Wednesday last week.
And what'd you say? You're in favor of it?
If David Wright was in favor of it, I was in favor of it.
I still wouldn't have been because I just don't think this is the timing to do it.
Hmm. Like, well, I mean, it would be weird timing. The only reason this came up is because there was a social media post. Maybe
there was a video. There was a video that made it seem as if Lindor was going to be
into the
captaincy.
We don't know if that video was real or fake now.
Right.
And so, who knows? And it just created internet speculation on a dead All-Star week. So
no doubt.
There's nothing to talk about, so people speculated about it.
Real quick, we'll come back. We'll get your calls, 888-808-1019, and a huge issue around retiring numbers that I do need to bring up to you guys.